I started to deal. Now, at this time, I really dealt with women. Before that, they were dreams. Now they were reality. Okay. And then, additionally, I was politicized. And what it means is that look, again, what is typical for me, I more out of emotion is the wrong, stomach reasons or some. Look, I simply could not become a soldier. I became a pacifist mostly due to gut feeling. But now, when I was 17, 18, I was dealing with the pacifist tradition. I was looking, what did people do before me? I was, I did not only, I wanted to do more than simply working for 18 months with disabled kids. And this is that I do not go to the army and that's it. Look, I was against the army in general. And so the question was, how can you be against the army in general? What are tools to get rid of that damn thing? What is, how can you get rid of these weapons of mass destructions which do not differentiate between good and bad, between whatever value you have? What's happening is, if you are in the way of these weapons, you are dead, and you as an individual cannot do anything. And so, during that time, I became very involved in these ideals of nonviolence and of grassroots movements. What did it lead to? It led to that essentially to many of the things I did then in the following 6-7 years. And look, questions, how can you change a society without, how can you change it fundamentally? How can you change it without using violence? Because the moment you would use violence to change a society, you essentially it would lead to the replication of violence and the look, violence creates violence, yeah, and then it became clear that if I'm against the army in Germany is so, as in most societies, is so an integral part of it that you cannot be only against the army. That if you are against the army, you are also against other parts of the society. And what became clear during that time was that if you are against that this earth may be destructed via weapons of mass destruction, it also could be destroyed via the ecological crisis we had, or we seem to go into. And so the question was, how can you change that? And I became really influenced by libertarian pacifist ideas, and these ideas that on one side we should live already today the way we want to live in the future, and that we have to develop now the structures of how it should be, that we start to try to get rid of these weapons of mass destruction by using essentially the tools of nonviolence, you know, the way they were developed by Gandhi here in the civil rights movement, stuff like that. And so starting when I was 18, essentially for the next 6-7 years, I became an organizer and lived non-violent organization forms, you know, and so it started with that we look that I was looking for people who had similar ideas I had, and that we met 8-10 people and started to discuss ourselves, our ideas, our future, what can we do, and that this led then to the first things we did, like burn publicly our official draft papers, and that we started to and this is when I for the first time came in contact with the law on this level. Then because I was a pacifist and a recognized pacifist, because I was recognized by the jury of being a pacifist, when I was burning my draft papers, nothing happened to me. But the friend of mine, who was not recognized as an official pacifist, he did now a total illegal act, and he came now in, got his trial, you know? And so this led to that we publicized that stuff, you know, and that then the day he had his trial, we organized that. We originally did it 6 people, but we burned publicly our papers. That we organized that in front of the court where he did had his trial. Then we burned 60 people burned their stuff. And look, we learned a lot. What we learned a lot from was here really the civil rights movement, in the sense of. It was totally clear if you wanted to participate in something like the burning of your papers, you had to be prepared. You cannot do that without knowing what you do. You have to be aware of the consequences. It could mean that you have to pay this penalty. It could mean later when we did other stuff that you go to prison. It could, you know... It could mean that the United States of America do not allow me to enter their country. Yeah. And you have to be aware of that. This is an awareness, a long-term awareness, but another awareness you have to be aware of is if you do something which involves direct action, it could be that you are confronted with the police. It could happen that they hit you with a stick on your head. Now, how do you react? Do you hit back? What do you do? So, look, role-playing-wise, we prepared us on this stuff. We got lawyers to tell us what could happen to us. And we, look, with a small group, we always made ourselves, we did it in small groups. So, essentially, 20 people cannot take care of 20 people. You have to divide that in 2 groups of 10 people, that the 10 people look out for each other. And then if you have multiple groups, these groups have to learn to communicate. And look, what we had to learn was when you do direct actions, you have to deal with the decisions not on a voting base. Because it does not mean anything if 6 people want to do one thing and 4 want to do another thing. You cannot force anybody to put his head in front of a tank. It's impossible. You have to do that on a conscience level. And you have to learn the methods to do that. So, organizing forms like that of direct, non-violent action, this was extremely important for me between the age of 18 until I came to the States. So...
And had this started when you were doing your...
Essentially what happened that during my civil service, I had the time to deal with traditions of pacifism. I had time to deal with what political groups are here. what sort of people are doing, thinking similar things as I do, and where are they organized, going in contact with them, stuff like that. Yeah.
And how do you account for this transformation? Is this part of a, this kind of that started off as discussions in school and at home with your father about kind of politics and the state of the world, or was it more attached to that the government, the state, had now decided you were a pacifist and therefore, you are a pacifist?
No, I think that it was more an evolution from myself. Clear-cut, the situation that I had now 1.5 years where I dealt with these disabled kids and that I had time to for myself and read and think, that for sure catalyzed the whole thing. But I see it as a, in a way, I see it as a natural evolution. And, yeah.
And how much were you identifying what your activities and your kind of direct action... How much were you identifying with this larger movement that was going on across the world, at least in the Western world, among a certain group of people, primarily college students and say, counterculture, versus what was going on within a generation of German people?
Okay. We totally saw us as the people before us were the... people of the 68 revolution, the people who, what was typical for 68 in Europe or in Germany? The one thing was is that until 68, fascism was not taught in school. And in 68, really what happened was that a generation of young people started to ask their parents, how could that happen? What did you do? And then additionally, it was a, it was the Cultural Revolution. Look, before that, you at the university, you see each other. Now you do see each other. And you did not have ties anymore. Also, it was the beginning and felt beginning of the Wohngemeinschaftsmovement of the of the communes. And... we saw ourselves in this context. However, when I did my civil service, this was around 75, 74. The 68 movement was dead. And additionally, look, the German movement fell apart, the 68 movement, in it seemed to be this big movement. Then you got this people which went in direction Baader-Meinhof and then a movement on the other side which became a movement inside the Social Democratic Party, USOS, and during that time I essentially the 68 movement was dead.
Okay.
But clear-cut, we were the counterculture developing during that time, we were part of it in a way, yeah. And then what happened was that, look, for the next, from 75 till 81, really my major interest was this direct... non-violent grassroots movement. And this was also this fascinating time in Germany of the resistance movement against the atomic power plants, and then followed up by the resistance movement against the cruise missiles and Pershing missiles in Germany. Look, you have to see something very specific for Germany, which most Americans cannot understand. They... the first thing is the West German army, what nobody really was aware of, was the third strongest atomic powered army with atomic weapons. The deal during that time in Germany was that the German army had on German earth multiple hundreds of rockets. And but we did not have the atomic weapons on top of it. What happened was that in Germany, for example, on the Schwabenalb, you had this, how do you call it, the place where the soldiers are? This
barracks.
You had this barracks of the German army, and inside the barracks, surrounded by this 400 Germans, you had 20 Americans. And then what happened was that the Americans had the that the atomic weapons had two codes, one by the Germans, one by the Americans. And then the moment the president of the United States would decide to release the atomic weapons, in a minute, the Germans would be the third strongest army in the world, you know? And look, all this thing did not make sense. For example, the rockets which were on the Schwabenalb, these Lance rockets, they had these warheads which had multiple times the destructive force of the Hiroshima bomb, and they only flew 80 kilometers. So it, what would have happened if this idiocy of mass destruction would have happened, there would have been 15,000 atomic warheads in Middle Europe. Simply incredible, you know. And this was really one of the things, this idiocy which influenced me a lot. And look, very soon it became clear that I do not want to live with that damn thing. And so in, I could be off now 1 year or two. That could not be, now be around 76, 77, that there was, were these barracks on the Schwabenalb only 25 kilometers away with exactly the situation. German soldiers having rockets with Americans inside. With, and that I decided together with five other people to that we are fed up with it. And we went in front of it and put chains around us and chained us around the exit. And so essentially we were arrested. And very little happened. They took our names, and wait a sec. That's wrong, what I told you here. This first time that we chained us on, I was on the chain for the first 6 hours, and they left us alone for 6 hours. And simply used another exit. And then, what? Why did I put the chains off? I did something else. And this is when they arrested my friends. And my friends got a trial. But to our total surprise, they did not get any penalty. That was, it seemed that their defense was so convincing that this liberal court at this one moment in time, at this place, said, okay, that was not against the law. Okay. Half a year after this trial, I was sitting in the kitchen of the commune I was living at that time, and I had this dream that we could start a movement out of that. And I started to go to the typewriter and to write, if another 8 people are willing to spend the next 7 months organizing a long-term blockade of this barracks, that I would commit myself and follow up on that. Let's do it. Let's simply see whether we can find 6 or 7 people. And so I wrote this out and sent that to about 100 people, and it worked out. And what happened was that this led then to these blockades of Großengstingen, where then a summer later, or that was then a year later, 350 people in 35 small groups of 10 people each were blockading for 2 weeks this barrack. And in this case, we did not block the exit to the barracks. The atomic power plants were, we found out, in a small wooden place on the side, away from the barracks, hidden, and with a street in between. We blocked the street, and then what happened was that whenever the Americans were responsible here for the rockets, and the German soldiers were guarding the outside, and whenever the Americans wanted to drive through, they came, they beeped in front of us, we were sitting on the street, and they drove back, and then 15 minutes later the police came and arrested us. And what happened was that for 10 days, this street, constantly people were sitting there, and whenever the first 10 were arrested, the next 10 came, and so on. And so, yeah, this was Großengstingen. And ask me later why I was not, why I did not get a penalty for that, because we have to deal about the same time during medical school, because I'm now in medical school at this time.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Wait a sec, I was also a bit, little bit warped. This stuff, what was before, was the time when we blockaded the atomic power plants. And this is where I was arrested for the first time in my life. Yeah. And, there was a funny situation. If you ask me now, how did your parents react?
Right. I was
going to
ask that.
Right. Okay. Officially, the one deal was we always talk about it, and that I always, and I think still at this age, I was talking with my father whatever went through my mind. My mother always was fearful that I do the wrong things. And against me, she said, you're stupid, this should, however, during the first non-violent blockade of an atomic power plant where I was involved with, the following thing happened. This was in North Germany. This was in, how was this, is this place called? Forgot the name. So we were sitting in front of this atomic power plant, or which they built, and Brockdorf, it was called Brockdorf. And the police came, and we were sitting in front of it, and then they used one of these water of these tanks, which instead of having a cannon, have a water cannon. And they were, with high pressure, putting the water on us. And what happened was that I had a poncho on and was going with my back to the water cannon. And national TV got me on the news. There is a clip how this water was pushing me over the street. I was sitting and it really pushed me away. And then the next clip was how policemen took me on hand and feet and threw me over a barrier. And this was on national TV. And the next morning, my mother went to the bakery shop. And somebody came to her and said, they were talking in this shop about these people there, these anarchists, blocking the this atomic power plants. That was an event in Germany during that time. And then one woman was saying to my mother, and if I would not know it better, some of these people there look like your son. But then cannot be, because look, I was the good boy in the village, you know, teacher's boy. And my mother said, whatever her name was, Anna, it was my son. And I think it's right what he's doing. Okay. So, look, that's very typical that even if when she talked directly to me, my mother always was against that me doing that stuff, to the outside, she stood behind me. And very nice story, which we can talk in tomorrow about, but I tell you now, is, you know, Chantal, my wife, she's black. And now, last August, she came with my mother down from the vineyard into the village. And a woman was on the street, started to talk with her, and she asked her, who's that? And my mother said, that's Chantal. And she was looking totally puzzled that, and who is Chantal? And she said, that's my daughter-in-law. And what? She was totally, look, Swabian. How can I be married to a black woman? And Chantal, until today, has to laugh how my mother blasted this woman, you know? So, yeah. No, this is my mother, you know? She seems to be totally conservative in her views, but then she's voting for the Green Party. My father, who is much more liberal than my mother, would never vote for the Green Party. Yeah.
So in terms of how your village saw you, you were seen as an anarchist or a communist or some radical fringe group.
Look, I think that many people in the village understood. No. Okay. I think the majority of the village for sure. Sure was against this decision not to go to the army. It what and it, but after that time, I did not live in the village anymore. So my contact was a little bit broken. But surprisingly, what happened was that for some people in the later when we did this blockade I told you about in Groß Engstingen, there were two groups from 10 each from Neuhause which participated. And what happened was that one of the people who organized it then is now later became a friend of mine. And he told me last summer when I was visiting him that in the beginning he thinks that a little bit had changed in Neuhause, because look, I did these outrageous things for somebody in Neuhause, but my parents still accepted it, you know. So this meant that other kids could do. At least would have the possibility to do something similar. But, or it simply could have been the times to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's don't make too much out of me here, my influence. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And were you identifying yourself with any particular organized political party?
Not a party. Look, the thing was that pacifist movement has two legs. One leg is the this religious leg coming from, you here can identify with the Quakers, and but very all, and the other leg is the libertarian leg, which sees itself via a tradition from the non-violent anarchists, where you are suspicious against the state in general, because you need a state to organize something like a machine, like the military, and so the thing was that our ideas of change in the society was not to go through the parties, but to do it via grassroots movements. And I still remember the days when there were these ideas whether of the Green Party, how I was strongly opposed of founding a party. And my argument during that time was that one of the strengths we had as a group outside of the regular parties was that we could talk with anybody. Look, you could not put us in this context of you are a social democrat, you are a communist, you are a liberal. No, look, we are against this atomic weapons. And the moment, so I was ideal-wise much more grassroots. And until today, I do not know whether it was, whether the Green Party itself was something good or bad for Germany. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't see yourself as some kind of catalyst for, or at least your activities, your group, the people that you were organizing with in your activities as some kind of impetus for organizing a kind of a national Green Party?
No. In the contrary. Look, and I also did not see myself as a politician. I was an organizer, let's say, for my gut told me I want to do that stuff against Große Hengstingen. And then something really interesting happened, that this 1.5 years of organizing for this big blockade, I really spent perhaps 70-80% of my effort to organize that stuff. And I think it was me doing it. I identified with it, and I think I was good in it. And I really was able to organize people. But then, when it was over, essentially we had done what my dream was. And then people wanted to push me in a direction that I'm the organizer. And essentially, I was dead. What I mean with it is that there was nothing which I identified strong enough that I brought myself and my effort in. And therefore, look, I still try to do a little bit, but that was nothing real, you know? And so I got this typical experience of my life, look, that before I helped in a way, perhaps it would have happened without me, to initiate something which led then later to the big movement against these rockets and against the cruise missiles. Because the big anti-militaristic stuff which happened in Germany then 1 and 2 years later was directly a follow-up of Große Hengstingen, and they always saw that as the model, or some groups in the anti-militaristic movement in Germany saw it as a model how to organize. So perhaps, look, I initiated something. My little human was able to push a stone, but it was time for it. So look, in a way, this feeling that you can change something. On the other side, a year later, you put all the effort in, but it's not time for it, and I cannot do anything. So look, somewhere I'm as a human, between this balance that I am almighty and can change the world, and on the other side, most of the time, come on, nothing, I'm a nothing, you know? And look, that's the balance. We have to live this. Or I have to live this.
So yeah. Would you say a balance between some kind of idealism and some kind of pragmatism?
No. Also, look, here I mean under certain circumstances, you as an individual can change the world. If your small contribution would not be at this historical situation at this time, history would be different. However, this is happening twice in a lifetime or so, you know, and it may have happened anyway. But most of the time, you as a political being cannot change anything. You can put whatever effort you have, you can put your person in, and it's in vain, you know. And look, that was a very typical situation. When I met my first wife, Regina, she saw in me the big shot organizer. But that's not me, you know?
And why wasn't it you?
That is only in this one situation where I have this gut feeling, you know? And by chance, that was the time where it happened.
So that was like lasted 2 days or a year or 3 seconds that you had this feeling?
Look, this was a part of my life. I wrote a letter where I said, if 6 other people do that,
okay,
then we do that. So, yeah. You know, this has a little bit of similarity to science. We can discuss that tomorrow.
But in this space and time, you were an organizer, but yeah, only for that space and time.
Right. I'm not a politician, and I never was. Okay. Look, during that time, I was a mensch, I was a human being who had this thing to do. It had to be done, you know? And, yeah. Look, it was, yeah. Okay.
What exactly changed that made this space and time different? You know, that you then, this no longer fit what you were called upon to do or what you needed to do?
No, look, essentially what I think is I did what I wanted to do. I wanted to do this blockade. We organized that. Now it's on the other people's back.
Okay, so your call was...
I did my stuff.
Okay.
And sure, I still have a bad conscience that these rockets are still around.
Okay.
But, yeah, you...
Okay, yeah.
And the steam was out afterwards.
For you or...
For me. No, no. Yeah. What happened was that then... the year I left and came to the States, there were this big blockades against the cruise missiles and the Pershings, and they were a direct follow-up of that.
Okay. One last question, and I think a good point to stop for today. But, so how were you... Where was the boundary, or else how are you integrating these different lives? It seems you're leading this one, this call to action to organize this blockade and to create a life that was, you know, based upon these nonviolent principles with this other part of your life that you're working with small, you're working with children.
Oh, that was over.
You're making these decisions to go to medical school.
What happened was that after finishing social service, I decided that I did not want to go into mathematics. I wanted to do something which has to do with people, directly to deal with people, and I decided to go into medicine. Luckily, my grade average was good enough that I immediately was accepted to wherever I wanted into med school, and I chose to go to Tübingen. So I went to Tübingen with two ideas. One idea was that, okay, I study now medicine, and the other thing was that I start organizing nonviolent groups. And I think both was as important to me.
Okay.
If you would have asked me at that time what is more important, medical school or your social, what I had to do on a political level, I would have told you, sure, the political stuff is more important. And it was for me more important until I was at least, until I left Germany, I would say.
And did you see these as two different endeavors or activities? Or
no,
were they part of
no,
the same
because what happened was that medical school was easy. I had difficulties identifying with the medical students. Most of them I found out were... you have to know one thing, that if you go to... During that time, if you went to medical school, you did not have to go to the army. So what happened was that the normal people going to medical school did not have to make the decision whether they go to the army or not. And so most of the people I met at medical school were 2 years younger, and additionally missed the 2 years which I had, which were really important for me. And so the people I dealt with at medical school were mostly older, people who either were unable to immediately get a spot in medical school, or who had a second another profession.
Okay.
So yeah, and all people who were did something in between, which was different, you know. So I was attracted to this group, and medical school itself was easy. Essentially, I was able to do medical school, let's say, with 30% of my energy. And the way I studied for exams was together with other people teaching them. And it was extremely easy as long as it... In Germany, it's a little bit different. The medical system in Germany is that we do not have a pre-med. After the Abitur, we have 2 years of vorklinik. This is the basic sciences plus anatomy and that stuff, which is a little bit pre-med here plus first year. And this stuff was simple. It was natural sciences, but my ideal going to medical school was I was not interested during that time to go into academic medicine. My idea was that I wanted to become a family doctor who is living in a small village afterwards, let's say in the context of a commune or something like that, and doing... working with the people in the village and together with other people, yeah.
And often the Schwäbische Alb.
Not necessarily Schwäbische Alb, but yeah.
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 Okay. Well, I think we've covered quite a bit today. So.